Hey there, welcome to LSAT Demon Daily. I'm Nathan Fox, that's Ben Olson. We're the founders of LSATdemon.com and our weekly podcast, Thinking LSAT. We've got an email here from Fernando.
Dear Ben and Nathan, first of all, I want to thank you for creating such a great service. The Demon has helped my confidence and my ability to understand the LSAT. I started off with a 139 score and have managed to achieve a 163 on my last diagnostic test. I have been studying for about, that's nice work.
24 points so far.
I've been studying for about a year and still feel like I have not achieved my potential. I love studying.
I agree. Like, I don't think anybody has reached their potential until they're in the 170s. Really? I honestly believe that you can just keep going. Why can't you keep going? There's such a big, you know, the fact we have 10,000 questions to study. With 10,000 questions to study, there's always room to improve.
I think if you're loving the process, that's even more true. I think if you're just killing yourself, that's probably a sign too that you should get out, not just because you're never going to improve, but maybe because law is not for you.
If you hate it, if you procrastinate, if you really don't like it, then just drop out. Just do something else. There's a huge world. Do anything else. But for someone who's already made such big improvement, I think some people would be like, what? You've already made it to 163. You should take the test. That's already, you could come to, you know, Kansas, the shitty law school that tries to poach its own undergrads. You could come to Kansas with a 160. What are you doing?
Yeah.
But the broader market is like, get the highest score you can possibly get because it's just going to open more and more and more doors.
Fernando continues, I love studying for this test and I have a fiery desire to get a 170 plus on test day. Okay, clearly you should keep studying and it sounds like you will. So congratulations on that.
Yeah.
I have not chosen a date to take it.
Good.
But I feel the constant improvement and with due time, I will make it happen.
Love this.
Yeah, so far so good. Unfortunately, some of my already attorney friends tell me that I'm taking too long to take the test.
Here we go.
Just attorney friends.
People who don't know anything chiming in with their opinions about the LSAT, but go ahead.
Yeah. In their words, I will, quote, forget what I have learned and will experience a regression instead of the improvement that I am so fervently seeking.
Fuck off.
What are they even talking about? If you can, if you stopped studying right now and went on a vacation for a year, you might have a brief moment where you have to recall a little bit about where you were and what you were doing, but I would think that would come back very quickly. I'm talking about like 1 week because the LSAT is a skills-based test, not a knowledge test. Anyways, Fernando continues, I do not believe them, but I would be lying if I said that I wasn't worried that this will happen. When, Fernando, when would that, you're going to forget as you continue to study? My question is, can studying for this test too long hurt me?
No.
Resoundingly,
not.
No. A little bit about myself. I graduated with my bachelor's in business and achieved a 3.9 GPA during my undergrad. My goal is to get into an Ivy League school, and I will do whatever it takes to make this goal happen. I was meant to be an attorney.
I'm sorry that that's true, but if that's true, you're in the right place and you're doing the right things. You know, we try to talk almost everybody out of it, but you've got the burning desire to do this. It's apparent that you are gonna do this. I have no doubt, Fernando. I think this is a home run. I could see you eventually going to some of the best law schools in the country. Stop listening to these attorney friends. I mean, they're, you know, just because somebody scored high doesn't mean they know what the fuck they're talking about. You know,
And I don't even know if they scored high. I mean, there are so many attorney friends that I have who tell me all the time, oh, I wish I would have known you when I started this process.
Yeah.
Because they studied for 2 months. Someone told them that's all they could do. And they took the test.
Around here, it's lawyers who went to McGeorge down in Sacramento. And it's like that, you know, they prepped for a little while and got a 160 and went and paid money to go to a pretty shitty law school.
Well, you take your diagnostic, right? And you're like, oh, I got a 147.
And McGeorge is like, oh, well, our average GPA is 152.
Average LSAT, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Average LSAT is 152.
Yeah, well, I think too, naturally, people have no clue how far up you can go. And so when they take a diagnostic and they get a 147, they think, okay, with a little work, maybe I can get to 155. They're just doing this, like, what is it? This intuitive guessing as to how much they can improve. Maybe they're doing it based on how much they improved on the SAT.
Well, there's myths out there that are like, most people improve by, you know, maybe 3 or 5 points. Like, you should, it's an aptitude test.
There's myths too, but you also just like, I don't think it would be natural or intuitive to think I can go from below the middle of the score band to near the very top. Like, people probably just look at it and say, oh, okay, I know I can get better, but how much better can I get? 10%, 20%? I mean, in your normal life, right? If you go run a mile and it takes you 8.5 minutes, you think, okay, well, I could probably get down to 8. Maybe I can get down to 7.5. Can I get down to 4? No, that's going to be way too hard, or 5 or even 6. And so people, wherever they're pulling this quick judgment from, it doesn't matter. They believe it. And because they believe it, they quit. And I suspect that these attorneys are like, what in the hell are you doing? I studied for 3 weeks and I'm happy with my career now. But yeah, they also didn't probably go to the best schools in the world.
You know, I was shitting on Kansas earlier. It definitely gets reinforced when you start talking to the admissions people at these schools. I was at a pre-law undergrad meeting for University of Kansas, and they had a representative there. Their advisor was a admissions officer at the law school. And I heard the admissions officer tell them, most people don't get higher than a 160. I heard the admissions officer tell them, most people don't improve very much.
Yeah.
And it's like, because they were just trying to get you to apply with your mediocre score.
Yeah, it's funny because people hearing that are like, oh, it's so nice to hear someone be real with me. Like, she's being real. You know, she's telling me how it is. Oh, most people, like, don't fool yourself. But the reality is she's being very self-serving.
Trying to give you a bad deal. It reminds me of a friend of a friend has a husband who doesn't want her to work out.
Hmm.
I know. It's shocking. It's like, that's the worst thing I've ever heard.
Why?
Because the husband is worried that, you know,
if you go to a gym, then
people will hit on you. Or even if you work out at home, I don't want you to get hotter because then people, you know, somebody will take you away from me.
Oh, geez.
Or whatever. That's what these shitty law schools do. You know, they don't want you to be a good applicant.
Yeah.
Because if you're a good applicant, you're going to definitely deny them. While I'm on the topic of McGeorge, it's on my mind recently because, again, there's a lot of, like, you know, small time lawyers around here who don't make any kind of money but have huge debt to McGeorge School of Law. It's in Sacramento. It's affiliated with University of the Pacific, private university in Stockton. Their tuition is $57,000 a year, you know, as if they're Harvard. But the reality of this school is that they admit more than half of the people who apply. So last year, they got 938 applications. They accepted 519 people.
Hmm.
Then 2/3 of those people turned them down, and they ended up with a class of 175. So, yeah, of the people who they admitted, only 1/3 of the people actually said, okay, fine, I'll go to your school. It's just, you know, their median LSAT is 154.
How many do they give out scholarships?
They give 88% of the class gets some kind of a grant. That includes 19% of the school is getting full tuition scholarships. 28% of the school is getting half to full tuition scholarships. I can't imagine going to a school like that on anything less than a full ride. By the way, they do have conditional scholarships. They eliminate about 1/3 of the scholarships that they give. So it's just shady, man. It's like these schools are not. I know we got to get back to this email. Fernando was not talking about law school, but your attorney friends who might have gone to these kinds of schools are going to be like giving you bad advice, just saying, oh, well, what? You're already so what? You're practice testing 163? I mean, that's plenty to get into.
My God, I had a 158. Yeah, it's exactly. Like.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, just because they have a lifetime of debt does not mean that you need to get a lifetime of debt.
Yeah.
So you're doing exactly all the right stuff, Fernando. Thank you for emailing. Yeah, keep it up. Email us again, please, Fernando. Tell us how this works out for you.
If anyone else has questions, email daily@lsatdemon.com if you'd like to ask us a question or share some LSAT or law school admissions news. Thanks for listening.